Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Pius.
Virginia, 13-yard gain here on fourth down. And right now, not looking good. Trubisky's going to run it.
So Jake Bentley chased and dropped at the 15-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClaren hits by Taylor. One, two. He did it. He did it. Steamboat by McClaren has done it. McClaren has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up, and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights at 7 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Snapchat, SnapJHood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back, guaranteed. Also on Instagram, IGJHood, as we broadcast live. From our First Midwest Bank studios.
It's the way banking is supposed to be.
We'll hear from Mark Tauscher, ESPN Wisconsin talk show host, Super Bowl champion with the Packers. It is Meat and Cheese Week as we talk to you about the Bears and the Packers all week long right here on Under the Hood. Also, we'll have Jesse Rogers with the latest from San Diego. I see Theo Epstein is talking to the media right now, so we'll get that firsthand, that quickness with Jesse Rogers from San Diego. See what Theo Epstein's saying in San Diego for the winter meetings. And I got some hotness from Rick Hahn, White Sox fans. Wait, before you start saying, I can already hear you at the radio yelling at your radio now. How come he's not talking about the White Sox? What about us? I mean, we got a team. Isn't there a Hahn down there? Yes. Yes, back of the yards, Johnny. Yes, he is down there. And so is Kenny Williams. But we got the hotness from Rick Hahn. You're going to hear that this half hour. Rick Hahn, his thoughts about what the White Sox are going to do. Sox were 72-89 last year. How can they improve on that? We'll get to that in a little bit. But first, my friends, some terrific college and some terrific NFL action this weekend for football as we give you a wall of sound.
Here's my dog, Jay Hood.
Some radio, I'm told, will transmit news stories within minutes of their occurrence. It's the age of information.
You want me on that
like a
wall.
Sack.
You need me on that wall.
You play to win the game.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
What about
playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
The Bears are what we thought they were.
Need a pitcher.
They're what we thought they were.
What do you care? Okay. If you were 2-7, you'd be in a bad mood too.
What's up with the what's up?
A terrific weekend for football. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. By the way, Sean, that 2-7 that did get tossed about, that's when he was in New Orleans, right?
No, that was his last year with the Bears.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really upset.
He was really upset.
Oh, that was that's like my third year in the business.
Yeah, that was what the Brad Muster, Neil Anderson Bears.
Yeah.
Waddle might have been on that squad.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Because I heard so many negative thoughts from Ditka when he's in New Orleans, too. But, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it was, boy, that was some dark days. Because Bears fans didn't want to let Ditka go, but McCaskey said, like, it's time to move on. And now we have media star Dave Wannstedt that took over for Ditka at that time, because that was the right move. Now time for our wall of sound right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Let's take a look at the NFL first. Okay, so even though Patrick Mahomes wasn't Patrick Mahomes because of the hand injury, It was a big marquee game with the Chiefs and Patriots in the late games. It took place yesterday as the Chiefs won 23-16. Mahomes 26 for 40, good for 283 yards and a touchdown. And the question was, well, what's going on with the offense and Tom Brady? Nothing's going on with it. Hey, he was, you know, he didn't have 200 yards, but he had a touchdown. Tom Brady had did not have the running game that he wanted. And he tried to get to Edelman in the end zone at late in the game. It just didn't work out. But Mahomes was right on target.
Second and 25. Coming after him again. He got hit again. Got an open man. And it's caught at the 15 and taking it to the house is McCole Hardman, the rookie. This is the game. Up the middle, the pass to the end zone. Knocked down by Breland. Incomplete. Denying Edelman. Denying the Patriots.
Right there on CBS, Jim Nantz on the call. Boy, that was a heck of a game. And a number of good games on NFL Sunday yesterday, but the Patriots fall short against the Kansas City Chiefs. How about another good game that I kept my eyes on with San Francisco? We talked about them earlier, right? The 49ers in that game against the Saints. Hats off. Another marquee game for the NFL as the Saints lose to the 49ers 48-46. It seems like the 49ers have almost everything to compete, including a great tight end in Greg Kittle.
Garoppolo fires. It is caught. Still on his feet is Kittle with a big and the stiff arm, George Kittle, flags fly, he's down to the 30. What a run by George Kittle.
Yeah, Kittle was just tremendous, and so were the 49ers, and a great seesaw back and forth game as the 49ers went on the road in the Superdome by a score of 48-46 as we give you a wall of sound with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. How about the Rams last night? You kind of thought, okay, Seahawks on the road against the Rams. Okay, Seahawks already coming in 10-2. You know, they've got a lot of momentum their way, and the Rams found a way in Los Angeles to get it done. There's a lot of questions in L.A. about Jared Goff. I've told you this before, but for those of you listening to me for the first time, once again, you have a head coach in Sean McVay said, oh, yeah, Goff does everything we need. He's great. He's great. He's great. All the press clippings, right? Everything. And then that was last year. Then Goff gets this big, big amount of money, right? Huge money. And he's kind of leveled off. But the reason why that he was able to get a lot of money, not just because of the Super Bowl appearance, it's just that the coaches always are talking up Jared Goff as if this guy was the next coming. And the offense is not exactly how it should be. Todd Gurley, though, ran the football well for a touchdown, 23 carries, 79 yards.
Rams 5-yard line. And Gurley swings to the outside. Stiff arm into the end zone. He goes for the touchdown.
Baltimore is a very exciting team as well. You take a look at the Baltimore team. When I watch that Ravens team, I'm looking for something special, and we got it on Sunday. Ravens beat the Bills 24-17. Josh Allen, 17 for 39, 146 yards and a touchdown. But Lamar Jackson, he was out there with his three touchdowns, had a terrific running game with Ingram, Lamar himself, Gus Edwards running the football well, and the defense came to play as well on the road for Baltimore, on the road against a hot Buffalo Bills team.
It's a first down for Baltimore. Jackson throws it. Wide open, Hayden Hurst. Does he have enough speed to get there? Hurst does. Touchdown, Ravens.
So there it is. Baltimore winning. They're 11-2 on the season as they defeat the Bills 24-17 as we give you a wall of sound right here on ESPN 1000 of the ESPN app. LSU took my Georgia Bulldogs to the woodshed. If you listen to any of our Chicago's college tailgate shows, I've been saying all season that Georgia's a good football team, but they just don't have enough offense. Luckily, I was at UIC, didn't have to watch a lot of this because I was calling UIC Flames basketball on ESPN Plus on Saturday. And I went back home and watched it because I know that was going to be the end. I knew the LSU was just that good because of the eventual Heisman Trophy winner in Joe Burrow.
Almost 20 minutes left to play. Here comes a blitz on Burrow. They're giving chase, and he somehow escapes again. And now throws late on the run. Got it! Jefferson. Gonna run out of real estate, but it's first and goal for LSU.
Yeah, it was harsh on CBS. It was hard to go back and watch my team, the Georgia Bulldogs, get beat down. But, you know, when the Georgia Bears are out there and can't move the football, I'm sorry, the Georgia Bulldogs, when they're out there, I did that on purpose, because our offense is very pedestrian, and it was strong defense, and that wasn't enough against who would very well could be the national champion this year in LSU. So that's what happens. Back to the drawing board. See what happens. Let's take a look at other games before I start crying. The Ohio State Buckeyes, number one team in the country against Wisconsin. Another game I kept my eyes on. Ohio State wins 34-21 against Wisconsin. Justin Fields, though.
Second and four. Here's Fields with time in the end zone.
Gus Johnson on Fox. Yeah, Ohio State solidified themselves. Big game against Wisconsin. Wisconsin had a nice lead in the first half. Ohio State put themselves in a position to win, and they got it done with Justin Fields as quarterback for Ohio State. Trevor Lawrence and Clemson once again in the hammock, the golden hammock that is their schedule and their conference. Sitting back, comfortable, no problem against Virginia.
Hard to take a shot. Wide open is Justin Lawrence.
Yeah, and stayed on top, 62-17 against Virginia. Oklahoma, woo, what a game against Baylor. Whoa, an overtime. Oklahoma defeating Baylor 30-27. Oklahoma's now the number four team. And we'll talk to Howard Griffith, by the way, from the Big Ten Network coming up at the top of the hour. We'll get his thoughts about some of the matchups and also his thoughts on the Final Four. Does he agree with the committee? Oklahoma, terrific team offensively. And they were able to hold it down defensively enough to win this game.
They rush four, drop everybody else, and they still get there. He got the throw-off. It's incomplete. And Oklahoma is the Big 12 champion again.
That is our wall of sound right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Boy, some terrific games, college and pro, for sure. Really enjoyed it this weekend. Except Georgia losing to LSU. As you are listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, glad that you're with us. This is Meat and Cheese Week for the Bears against the Packers. We turn now to our colleague from ESPN Wisconsin, a Super Bowl champion, talk show host. It is Mark Tauscher. He's with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Mark, as always, I appreciate your time. Before we get to the Bears, though, what were your thoughts on the Packers yesterday and that win against the Redskins?
You know, I think everybody, what's interesting about it is you play a team that's really struggling and their quarterback is a little bit dinged up and they had, you know, four or five starters out, their defensive backfield. And, you know, even though Green Bay won, I don't feel like anybody was that excited about how the offense looked. It started off, it was, you know, a couple easy touchdowns. You're thinking, all right, here we go, let the ball roll. And the rest of the game, it was kind of, yeah. So, there's some concerns. I don't think anybody feels great about where this offense is, but yet you're 10-3 and in a great position here if you can win, you know, two of your next three or all of them to have a bye and to host a playoff game. So there's kind of a yes, but when you're talking about Packer fans, how everybody feels right now.
Okay, so how would you characterize the offense? Would you say it's pointing up or sideways at this point in the season?
I'd say sideways. You know, it was interesting because Davante Adams gets hurt in the Philadelphia game, and he's having a, you know, he has a career half, you know, 100 and some yards, 8-9 catches, and everybody's like, oh boy, how is this offense going to do without Davante? And what it forced Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers to look at is, you know, how can we continue to move the football? And I thought the timing with Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams out of the backfield and everything else was really good. And since Davante has been back, he's had some games where he's put up good numbers. But we haven't quite seen with Aaron Jones and Davante Adams really popping yet. It's been one or the other. And this offense now is run through Aaron Jones, both in running the football. He had a great game against Washington. And in him getting out of the backfield, both him and Jamal Williams getting out of the backfield and putting extra pressure on a defense. So I feel like it's not where they want it to be, but there's the weapons. They're starting to figure out what they want to do. It's just now, all right, how can we do where we use Davante and our running backs to really get this offense going, because it feels a little bit like it's not quite found its rhythm yet, and there's still some work to be done.
Bears and Packers week. We're talking to Mark Tauscher from ESPN Wisconsin, a Super Bowl champion, with me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So after everything that we talked about this summer leading into this season, Mark, and trying to determine who's going to be at the top of the NFC North, how surprising is it to see the Packers not just in first place but at 10-3?
I thought it was going to be pretty close, and I thought it was going to be, Chicago, Minnesota, and Green Bay. And it was all about when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you automatically just assume, you're going to win some close games, and it's going to be – the defenses, with all the signings, you thought it would be better. And so I'm not overly surprised. I thought Green Bay was going to have a bounce-back year. I think with Matt LaFleur and that new energy that was kind of brought, I had a good feeling that things were going to, improve. But all of these games, if you look at Green Bay, especially the last 6 weeks, the point differential is actually not good for Green Bay because they got beat badly twice, but they're finding ways to win these close games. And a lot like Chicago last year, where the margin in the NFL is always pretty thin. And once you get rolling a little bit and Green Bay was able to win that game down in Chicago, all of the vibes kind of can change with one or two games. And I think that Chicago and Green Bay are very evenly matched teams. It comes down to winning those close games, and Green Bay's been able to do that for the most part this season.
I can pour through the numbers and watch the games, but you have more of an eye for this, Mark. So when I ask you, can you tell me the difference between McCarthy and LaFleur as far as approach offensively and what you see from play to play? What stands out between the two as far as a difference?
I think there is not a doubt that there's more. Getting the running backs involved in the passing game has just popped up. When you watch the film and you look at how this is approached, there's, I think, more play action, more movement of the quarterback and trying to establish the run. I just look at Aaron Jones and his production out of the backfield. If you want to look at stats that will differentiate it, look at the receptions and the explosive plays out of the passing game that these running backs have had in comparison to last year. That's the biggest difference. But I think when it's third down, the passing game, you can see Aaron Rodgers' imprint all over this. There's still a lot of the McCarthy things that I think Aaron liked, and I think Matt LaFleur is trying to blend in that play action, run game, that stuff. He's trying to get that in. It's trying to mix both so that you're getting a little bit of everything. But I think Matt LaFleur's, what his impact is on this offense, you're seeing it in the production of the running backs out of the backfield catching the football.
Mark, I'm not trying to rush McCarthy back into the NFL, but I guess that after a year off now, he'll be able to really see everything, the new innovations that we're seeing in the NFL and how offense is working in 2019. But I expect for him to return to the NFL, right? I mean, don't you think that one of these openings that will happen when we get to Black Monday, that McCarthy should be able to fill one of those jobs?
I do think so. A, he has a great resume, and B, you look at kind of trends, and the trend this last offseason was Sean McVay, young guns, young offensive minds, and with the exception of Matt LaFleur, it's been a lot of struggles for new coaches in this league. So typically the balance kind of flips back around, and you're going to look for more experienced coaches that also have those new-age ideas, because what you don't want, the days of running the football and playing good defense and it just being, 1980s and 90s football, those days are gone. So now it's more of look at what Baltimore's doing. What's having success? And it's still Sean McVay. It's still Kyle Shanahan. It's that, Matt LaFleur. It's that brand of coaching that is having success. So I think it's great for Mike. He's had a year to kind of rejuvenate. And I would be shocked if he's not heavily considered for a lot of the openings that are going to come up in early January.
My colleague from ESPN Wisconsin, Mark Tauscher, with Jonathan Hood on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. What is the key that you're looking at for this upcoming game on Sunday with the Bears and Packers? Is there a matchup that you're intrigued by?
Yeah, I think obviously, Tariq Cohen is always somebody that I think you have to look at with the Bears from an explosive play standpoint. How are you going to approach that? Because this team, Green Bay, has struggled with running backs out of the backfield and tight ends over the middle. That's been kind of the recipe for teams to have a lot of success against this defense. And then, obviously, when you play the Bears, it all starts. Don't turn the football over. I don't care if it's Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs and Hunter Hillenmeyer and that group, or if it's Khalil Mack. It always comes down to that defense and not giving short fields to Chicago's offense, because I still think, even though Chicago's had more success recently moving the football, I still think in order to beat Green Bay, you're going to have to create turnovers, and that always is the objective when you play, you know, a Bears team. That defense is their ball hawks, and they find ways to, you know, either it's peanut punch or stripping the football and sacks. It's all about protecting the football when you play the Chicago Bears, and I think that if Green Bay can do that, they're going to be in good shape on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, the question here is whether or not Trubisky has figured some things out here based on what we saw this past Thursday against Dallas. Mark, we're just trying to figure out, like, you know, is Trubisky going to be the quarterback for the future or not? And it is split right down State Street on that, too. It's 50-50 every day. It is a battle on these shows, including mine, trying to figure out what Trubisky is because, you know, on one hand, you saw him against Dallas, and he was able to run out of the pocket, and he was able to get some yardage that way. And, you know, being able to kind of move the pocket and get down the field, utilizing a tight end, something we haven't seen all season. An offensive line, it worked really well on Thursday for the first time in a while. So it's just, I guess this game on Sunday will tell a great story on whether or not Trubisky, win or lose, to find out if Trubisky can be consistent and put together back-to-back quality games.
Yeah, and I think from just looking at it from the outside, there was, you know, a lot of, you know, from a, if you're looking at, is Trubisky the guy, 3 or 4 weeks ago, everybody was probably, nope, it's time to move on. You know, he's got the hip, and he wasn't playing very well. I think the big thing for him and watching him, especially with the success that you guys had last year, making plays with his feet, picking up first downs, running the football, and it looked like he was protecting his shoulder. I think he's got some shoulder issues. He needs to use his legs as a weapon. And whether or not he's going to be the guy, I think people are starting to believe it again, but there's a lot of doubt. You know, can he sit in the pocket and make the throws when you need to? My guess, this defense from Green Bay is going to say, you know what? We want to see, can you make throws consistently in the pocket? Don't beat us with your feet. Don't let him run the football. And if Trubisky can sit back there, and you heard Tremont Williams after the first game, it was all about making Trubisky play quarterback, make him make those throws. And if he does, you tip the hat, and we'll see. I think you're right. It'll be a great test to see where Trubisky's at, you know, throwing the football from the pocket after Sunday.
Mark, what do you think is more sustainable for the future of the league offensively? Is it what we're seeing in San Francisco with Garoppolo, or is it what we're seeing with Lamar Jackson, for instance, in Baltimore?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of Lamar Jacksons. I just don't think you're going to find the talent and the speed and how well – he's such a great runner, and it puts so much pressure on you with his speed that it makes you cover things differently and – you know, he's accurate with the football. If you can have all that, great, go ahead and do it. I don't see a lot of those guys. I do think the future, running the football and still being physical, but being able to get big plays out of that play action, I think that's where San Francisco is really good. That's what Green Bay is trying to get good at. So I would say it's going to be easier to find a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo than it would be to find someone like Lamar Jackson.
Lastly, Marco, what's it like on your show now as far as the rivalry? Does it still feel like a rivalry to Packer fans because it's Packers-Bears? Because keep in mind, as you well know, because you've been in this rivalry for a long time as well, the Packers have been the hammer and the Bears have been the nail.
Oh, it's still a rivalry. And I think, especially in the southern part of the state, you know, where Milwaukee-Madison, there's a lot of respect. I think it's, you know, with especially just going back to our playing games, we played – you know, it was against Urlacher, Tommy Harrison. We knew those guys. Everybody knew each other so well. I think we had a ton of respect for what the Bears were all about, and I think that's still the same way. And, you know, both teams are good. Last year, obviously, Chicago got the better of Green Bay. This year, hopefully, it'll be the other way around. And so there's just a ton of respect, and I think that rivalry, especially from the fan standpoint, it's still at as good of a level as it's ever been.
It's strong. It's palpable for sure in the streets here. The Bears fans are hungry for a victory. They just want to see consistency from the quarterback, and we'll see on Sunday. It's always interesting, Mark, as you well know.
Yeah, and Jonathan, I'll tell you what, up here and in Wisconsin, there's nothing better than Green Bay being able to get another win closer to division and doing it at the Bears' expense and knocking them out of the playoffs. I think everybody up here would feel pretty good about that, too.
That's enough from you. Mark Tauscher from ESPN Wisconsin. As always, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
You bet. Thanks, Jonathan.
Jonathan Hood.
Because all we trying to do is do good. Put on my hood when I walk through hoods.
On ESPN 1000.
Yo!
go. It's time for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
There's a drive deep right. Cubs win! Cubs win! On a grand slam by Hayward!
That ball is crushed.
Angle! In the air again! Come on now! Back-to-back nights! What are you doing out there, Adam?
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
There goes Baez. Throw to the plate. Save! He got in! Almago!
He's walking on fire!
Deep to the field! Big smash for the win!
Daniel Polka once again.
He walks it off.
Yo, it's time for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
It's Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Time to warm up the hot stove. Talking Cubs and White Sox with you as we go to San Diego, California. Jesse Rogers covers Major League Baseball and the Cubs for ESPN 1000, ESPN.com. And he joins us right here with our hot stove update right here on ESPN 1000. Hello, Jess.
Hey, Jay Hood. What's happening, pal?
Oh, you know what's happening, pal. Sunny San Diego, and you've got the information. You are right there. Talking to Theo Epstein just moments ago, give us some of the highlights of what Theo had to say.
First and foremost, as they always say on day one, we're not close to anything. And then, of course, that can change at any moment. And you know, we're not allowed to call them liars if they do something tomorrow. Because, wait, it changed overnight, right? But, I mean, he says he's not close to anything. You know, trades can be complicated. You lay the groundwork. You start exchanging names and all that jazz. I mean, it's different than free agency where, obviously, there's two parties involved, the team and the agent, but it's a whole different level when there's two teams involved, and now you've got to figure out the prospects and all that stuff. So I think they're just working through it. And, you know, I put it to them, if you're going to trade a core player, do you pretty much have to have young pitching in return? He's like, well, that would be, you know, sort of a perfect scenario. We'd like to have young starting pitching coming back the other way, and I think that's the focus here. And I do think the focus is still Chris Bryant, Wilson Contreras. I don't think Javi's name is really coming up. Schwarber's name is really coming up. I highly doubt Rizzo will be moved. So it's what I thought, what we thought at the end of the regular season. Maybe a lot of people were surprised back then that Contreras' name was involved, but I had heard that early on. Those are the trade chips. It's the reason it's those two is the value you can get in return. And from what I understand, they are asking for monster returns, and that's the way this thing works. And then as the offseason moves along, you maybe get a little bit closer. I think the monster return really, if you can believe this, Jay Hood, is for Wilson Contreras because he has 3 years left, and he's making nothing right now. First year of arbitration, okay, we'll make a few shekels, but nothing huge. Where Brian only has 2 years left and is up near $20 million already, so the ask for Contreras is huge. I think the ask for Bryant would be more reasonable, and I think that's the deal that can get done.
Let's break down Chris Bryant for a second, because on the surface, this is a cornerstone player. You know, I appreciate Bryant because I just think that he's a cornerstone for the franchise. However, there have been some injuries. So I'm just wondering from your standpoint, I mean, if you are Theo and Jed, how do you look at Bryant? Could you look at him and say, you know, we can keep him for the long haul, but we just can't see us paying a ton through the nose for him? Or is he expendable because of his injuries?
It isn't that simple. I think getting to your point about the injuries and everything, I mean, and maybe his struggles through those injuries, I don't think they're trading Mike Trout. You know, I don't think they feel like they're trading what could be the best player of all time. They might be trading a Hall of Famer. So there is that aspect of it, there's no doubt. But I think when you bring up the injuries and maybe there's a couple warts to his game and the agent and being Scott Boras and the idea that they're going to sign him they're going through a grievance thing. Is Chris Bryant really going to give them a hometown discount if he loses this grievance? You know, there's so many layers to this thing. But, look, we're finding reasons to trade Chris Bryant. The reason is, because when four or five guys become free agents at the same time, and Ricketts is already tightening the wallet a little bit there, someone has to go. You can't re-sign them all. And on top of that, the Cubs really believe they need to make a change anyway because they've been failing these last couple years, especially on offense. So all of this is conspiring for Chris Bryant to be moved. So it's not just like, oh, they don't like Chris Bryant. Of course they like Chris Bryant better than Schwarber or maybe even Rizzo because because of the ages and definitely more than Contreras. I mean, Baez is probably on the same level as Bryant, but the reason we're landing on Bryant is because of all those things I just said. If Bryant was the only one up in 2 years and everybody else was locked up, well, then you might lock him up because, you know, you have money to spend. But with everybody up and everyone getting raises, he becomes the guy in a sense. It doesn't have to be the guy, but it all those things add up to him.
So, obviously, when it comes to the farm system, you mentioned pitching is something that this Cubs team needs. If it's a trade to the Phillies or a trade to the Braves, I guess the question is who has a better farm system? I guess I'm leaning Braves in that regard, right? Unless they don't have the pitching that the Cubs want.
As far as I know, it is the Braves. I've done my homework on this. I was up in Alex Anthopoulos' suite, the Braves GM, and I don't know how many times he said, we are in need of a cleanup hitter. Mm-hmm. We are in need of some protection for Freddie Freeman. Well, Freddie Freeman is a lefty. Here's Chris Bryant from the right side. They have an opening at third base. They have major league ready young pitching they can return, in addition to prospect pitching they can send back, in addition to a third baseman or two they can send back. I can't find a better fit than Chris Bryant to the Braves, and I'll add another layer to it. The fact of the matter is the Braves aren't the type to sign up an Anthony Rendon for 8 years and $300 million. They don't do those deals. They signed Donaldson for 1 year. They just signed Hamels for 1 year. They want to be on the fringes of those big money things. Well, here's a 2-year commitment at basically $45 million or so for Chris Bryant. If he was a free agent, any GM in the land would take him at 2 years and $45 million. Of course, if he was a free agent, he would never agree to 2 years. But that's the beauty of still being under arbitration for two more years. You get him at cost control, so to speak. It's still $20 million probably, and then $25 million or whatever. But, I think the fit is with the Braves more than the Phillies.
Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So if we're looking at the hierarchy of the Cubs, Jess, so it's to me, Bryant is what, second on that list of those that you would let go? Because Baez is number one, right?
Well, who can bring you? Are you asking who can bring the most value back?
Yeah,
is that kind of the question?
Well, we're talking about the best of the best, and
right.
So Baez to me is an there are no untouchables. But
no.
If you're going to say one, it's Baez. Two would be Bryant on that list.
Right, but the reason Baez ahead of Bryant is because of everything he can do and the fact that he plays shortstop. Mm-hmm. Right, like. I know once you move Bryant, you need to replace him. I get that idea. Once you move anybody, you got to replace him. But like Baez is really going to be hard to replace at that position, where Bryant is going to be a little bit easier. And the fact of the matter is, I think most people believe Baez will be a little bit easier to sign to an extension. So that's where we're at. It should be Baez and Bryant as untouchables, but it just doesn't work that way in the situation the Cubs are in. Trust me, I love for them to keep Chris Bryant, but I get why he's on the market. I get why Contreras is on the market.
Any thoughts about the Cubs coaching staff under David Ross? Some changes there. Any names that pop out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, I'm going to go on the record, and I don't know the guy, so I want to be clear with that. I don't know if I love Andy Green as the bench coach, okay?
Former Padre manager.
Former Padres manager, yeah. Who is apparently a really good in-game tactician. But in praising him over and over from other people in the game, Padres people I've talked to, in praising him for that, they're leaving out maybe something he's not good at. You know, they don't want to – if you have nothing good to say about someone, you don't say anything. Well, if the one thing they have good to say about him is an in-game tactician, well, what does that say about maybe his skills with the players? Like, from what I understand, that was part of the problem. That is an open secret that he had some maybe issues with the players, and it just didn't work. Well, as my consigliere on the bench, I kind of need that guy to be delivering messages to the players. So and that would be Andy Green's job. So is that? But we know that David Ross is a really good communicator. That's his strength. So maybe that won't be Green's job. Maybe Green is all about innings 1 through 9. Help out David Ross. Pick the right pitcher. Get this guy up. He's good at that. But Ross will be the guy to deliver the messages. And who's Ross's guy to do it if it's not him? It's Mike Napoli, the quality assurance coach. So I don't know. I feel it's a little bit weird. Like maybe Napoli should be the bench coach, you know, and Andy Green should be. But it doesn't really matter, you know, the labels. Okay, this guy's the bench coach, but maybe he's not the consigliere, right? The quality assurance coach might be. Labels don't really matter as long as everybody knows their role and can execute it the right way. So that'll be an interesting dynamic. It's not a Ross hire, Andy Green. So let's see how that plays out.
I don't like that. I don't like that. I got to be able to name my coaches, man. I'm just not a big fan of that. And by the way, my bench coach has to be 60 years or older.
I agree with you. There's a lot of people in the game. There are a lot of them in the lobby right now in the hotel we're staying at that are questioning that decision. Why wasn't it Freddie Gonzalez? Why wasn't it Jim Riggleman? So this isn't me talking. This is just people in the game that have been around, scouts, other people. Why wasn't it a grizzled older guy that is absolutely not interested in managing again? I'm assuming Andy Green is. Now, I assume they vetted him, and he's going to be a good right-hand man in terms of the relationship, but you don't know it until you do it. So, look, there are times where you want to get ahead of something, and other times you want to wait and see, but this is what I'm going to say about Andy Green. You know, I said things about Yu Darvish that weren't great before they signed him, and for a year it looked like he was living up to his reputation, but in this last year, he's turned things around. So doesn't mean that Andy Green has to live up to whatever reputation he brings with him. We'll see.
I saw that you tweeted that Theo said that there was, you know, some opportunities here. There's some, you know, that there's some nibbles, pretty much. There's some promising leads out there.
Right.
Wondering how do other Major League Baseball teams value the Cubs players as much as the Cubs do?
No, I do. I don't mean to interrupt. I do think they do. I mean, it just didn't work as a sum of the parts. Look at the back of the baseball card for Bryant when he's healthy. Okay, mm-hmm. we know specifically when he wasn't healthy and the struggles he had. Look at the back of the baseball card. Even for Schwarber through his struggles, there's some damn good numbers there. Certainly Rizzo's card looks great, and Baez's card looks great. Of course, every player has some warts. Baez's OBP isn't great, and you know Rizzo fluctuates. He doesn't have a great April, but then he comes on. So no one's perfect, but yes, I do think the rest of the league looks at these individuals pretty darn well. But with 2 years of control, you're not getting back, you know, the next Babe Ruth. You have to understand the expectations of a return. You're getting a guy for 5 or 6 or, you know, 6+ years. They're getting a guy for 2 years.
Well, how about the Strasburg deal, huh? I mean, that's an amazing amount of change there for Washington Strasburg.
Yeah, if I'm Boris, I just send all my clients to Washington. How well has he done with them? Now, he didn't do so well with Harper, but certainly their offer to Harper got them, you know, if not more than, you know, with Philadelphia. So I think that's interesting how everybody Boris sends that way gets paid or gets paid by another team. But it's not shocking. Here's my point. It's not shocking under this landscape. I think the league, with 2 years to go, two off seasons to go until the collective bargaining agreement is up, the league is saying, okay, guys, Let's not even have a sniff of collusion here. Let's just go about your business. And you know, the last two off seasons, it's bad timing for those free agents. It's going to be good timing for these free agents, and certainly good timing for next year's free agents. I think you're going to see this trend of some guys getting paid big money here this year and next. So there's no, you know, there's some goodwill built up before the next CBA, and there's no collusion talk. So I think there's a lot of layers to this stuff, why people are getting paid all of a sudden so early in the off season, but it's not by coincidence. I think it's strategic.
Happy for Ted Simmons to go in the Hall of Fame. I got to give Major League Baseball credit. Like, Ted Simmons goes to the Hall of Fame, and so does Marvin Miller, the union executive. However, you have to give it to him posthumously. He was 95. You had years to give it to Miller while he was alive, Jesse. Alive.
I know. And there was a big, big deal about that when he was alive. I mean, the guy's turning 90 and then 91. And that, I mean, you know, come on. Just give it to him. I mean, right? I guess Jeff Passan tweeted out the family didn't even want him in the Hall of Fame after he passed away. But they did it. It was a close vote. And I don't understand. It's like, guys that paved the way, they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame more than some players.
True.
And this guy paved the way. He changed the game. Players that change the game get in the Hall of Fame. He changed the game off the field. And it's not like, you know, guys off the field don't get in the Hall of Fame. They do. There's executives every year. There's a reason they get these guys in every year, and he certainly deserved to be in before yesterday.
All right, lastly, every night I'm going to ask you for a segment we call Whispers in the Lobby. So give us a whisper. Give us a little something. Something that you heard in your – just, you know, walking by, you just kind of heard a whisper on something.
Yeah, let me think, because I heard several whispers. I think the whisper in the lobby is, well, I don't know if this is so much of a whisper as much as, you know, people in Chicago have talked about it. Ricketts is clamping down on the wallet. I think I mentioned that earlier. It's just like people are saying that the Cubs are tied up a little bit in terms of what they can spend. And they certainly were last year. They certainly are this year. Maybe next year it changes. But I think they need to get under that tax and prove that they're a good team again before Ricketts is going to let them spend. And that's kind of been the whisper about the Cubs down there. Like, okay, they had their spending spree. Maybe this is a year old. Maybe it's back-to-back years of hearing these whispers. But I just feel like it's been more pronounced here. As everyone knows, the Cubs are trading star players, which doesn't always happen.
I like it. Every night we're going to try to see if you give me a nugget. It doesn't matter what team.
Yeah, I'll have more. When we hang up, I'll think of more. But I just didn't have it at the top of my head. There's just a full day of whisper, so I'll have more for you tomorrow.
I know there's always something there. You know, there's always a whisper in the lobby, as Chris Russo from High Heat was yelling at Sandy Alderson to try to ask him, "Well, your vote? Did you vote twice? What happened with Teddy Simmons? It's unbelievable. He gets an Hall of Fame." And then him yelling at Sandy Alderson about the vote.
Just it's great stuff down in the lobby, man. You see everything going on. The shows are down there. Tons of people in baseball just hanging out in the lobby. So, look, last night really wasn't night one. This is night one. So I will have even better whispers for you tomorrow. But I remember, I ran into some people this morning, and they were in the game. Like, we're hearing your owner's not going to spend. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, join the club here. This is what everyone's kind of saying. So, and then he comes out and says they spent double on the renovation. So there's a lot of things going on there that I think fans aren't going to like in terms of hearing about this money and the, you know, marquee network. But maybe, you know, things will change a year from now. We'll see.
Yeah, big money on the farmers market, but not so much on the players. That's
I guess so.
Time for dinner, Jesse. Thanks so much.
You got that right. Take care, pal.
There he is. It's Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. Follow him on Twitter at ESPN Shy Cubs. Still to come, Howard Griffith, Chicago's own Big Ten Network analyst. We'll get his thoughts about the Final Four, how we can look at the college football playoff, and more. And don't forget Petty Junction as well, right around the corner as well. We find the pettiest of the sports weekend.
You're listening to my mans and them.
Just some men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic.
What? Jay Hood. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Yeah, the world has gone crazy. There's a story in the New York Post about bananas, right? The New York Post says, bananas, art world gone mad. This duct-taped fruit sold for $120,000. So banana duct-taped to Miami Art Gallery wall taken down after crowds become uncontrollable. Can you believe this? The first edition of this banana was sold at 1:15 p.m. a couple of days ago. It's so strange what people think is art. There is a banana that's taped to a wall, and it was sold for $120,000. How is that art? A banana. It's not even a ripe banana. It's so strange to me. People were uncontrollable, and they had to create uniform lines for people to come see it in an art gallery. So ridiculous. I have something that people want to see. Here's a banana and a duct tape. So dumb. I wouldn't go across the street to see that. Or in my own kitchen. By the way, really good show that I saw on HBO. Yeah, on HBO. The Watchmen with Regina King. I just got into it this weekend. Can I tell you something? It's so funny that I was leaving the house today. I looked over at my cocktail table, and there's a Essence magazine with Regina King on the cover. Give Regina King her flowers now. She is a Hall of freaking Famer. She's The Watchmen. I just saw the first two or three episodes of it. I got to get more into it. What a terrific show that she's in. She's been in everything. Everything that she's in, it turns to gold. American Crime, 7 Seconds as of late. You know, the Boondocks, obviously, as the voice of Riley and Huey Freeman. In the show Shameless for a little bit. The Gabby Douglas Story, Southland, 24. She has been in almost, you know, she was in Jerry Maguire back in the day. The young girl as Brenda Jenkins from 227 between 1985 and 90 is a Hall of Famer. Everything Regina King is in turns to gold. Give her flowers now. That's a Hall of Famer. I'm really enjoying that show that she's in, The Watchmen. Now she's going to, it's pretty much a cartoon character on that show in a lot of ways. A graphic novel person. That show should be in a magazine. In a comic book, The Watchmen. I'm looking up her IMDb. I can't believe how many. And, of course, in Poetic Justice, too, in 93. She's great. And that, my friends, is Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Some interesting thoughts from Howard Griffith from the Big Ten Network on the Final Four. We'll get to that coming up in our next half hour.
Jonathan Hood.
Photo shoot fresh. Looking like wealth. I'm about to call a paparazzi on myself.
On ESPN 1000.